You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Melissa Idris, and you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. Today we celebrate International Women's Day with a charitable organisation trying to address the welfare and needs of women and children. I'm pleased to introduce my guests on the show today, Tan Sri Rafiah Salim, President of Pertubuhan Tindakan Wanita Islam Malaysia, or better known as Pertiwi. Tan Sri, welcome to The Breakfast Grill. Good to have you on the show today.
Thank you for having me, and good morning, and of course, Assalamualaikum.
Waalaikum salam. Let's start with a little bit about Pertiwi. Now, I understand, Tan Sri, that Pertiwi has been around for 50 years now, since 1967.
Yes.
So it's a long-established organization. You've been trying to champion women's and children's rights. But let's take a look back in history and see how far we've come in these 50 years. How much would you say things have changed?
Well, I can talk about when I first joined Pertiwi, and that was in 1974. At that time, our target was limited. We were dealing with women. Our motto that time was, you educate a woman, you educate a nation. So Pertiwi then focused very much on education of women and education of children. You may not realize it, but in those early days, some women were still illiterate, you know. So there was a lot that we needed to do in terms of educating women and educating children. But since then, things have changed a lot. Alhamdulillah, the country has developed beautifully, and women have got access, equal access to education. In fact, if we were to see now, for tertiary education, there's more women than men.
You were also the Vice Chancellor for University of Malaya, the first woman chancellor for University of Malaya, I might add.
Yes.
So this was something that you saw as well during your tenure at UM. More women, more female students. In fact, I believe female students outnumbered male students.
Yes. In fact, now there's just under 70% of students are girls. And I remember when I became the vice chancellor, as compared to when I was in University of Malaya the first time, when I was a lecturer and I ended up being the dean of the law faculty. In those days, girls were in the minority. So I remember when I came back as a vice chancellor, we were still facing a situation where the biggest surau in the colleges were boys' surau, which was based on the earlier experience. Right. So we had to change that. You know, we had to swap the bigger surau for the girls and the small surau for the boys. This is one of those that seems to be very obvious in terms of the changes.
Right.
Some things, though, have not changed. Say, for example, subjects like engineering, you know, is still not terribly popular with girls.
Is there a reason for that, you reckon?
I don't know whether a lot of the engineering work involves working outdoors, perhaps, that puts women off. Maybe, because I can't say for sure. We haven't ever actually questioned the girls why, you know.
It could be a perception issue, you know.
It could be. It could very well be perception issue, you know. It's seen as probably a very manly thing to be an engineer, you know. Yeah. So, but other subjects, dentistry, for example, very popular with girls. You know, in this country, 70% of dentists are women nationally.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know, but it seems to...
It's funny because if you look at, say, certain caregiving professions like teaching, like nursing, that's very dominated by women.
Yes.
And yet men haven't been able to break into these or had the mindset shift to break into these?
I don't think an issue of them not being able to break in. I don't think they want to break in. You know, caregiving.
It seemed to be predominantly a female job.
Unfortunately, it has been the burden of women for generations and still is. You know, I mean, if you look at taking care of parents, for example, majority of it, I mean, falls on daughters.
Do you think it's a cultural issue?
It could be a cultural issue. It could also be women are naturally, they were born to be mothers. They're born to be carers, you know. So they're probably the one. Not that the sons don't love them, but the sons cannot give the tender, loving care that the daughters can give.
It's a predisposition.
It probably is that.
I'd like to come back and explore this, especially society's support for women, working women who are also playing a caregiving role. But I'd also like to come back a little bit to Pertiwi, which is quite fascinating. Something you said a little earlier about how in the early days, Pertiwi was all about educating women to reduce illiteracy among women. What issues are women facing now since, you know, we've managed to get women equal access to education?
Yeah. Well, we've moved further because we also looked at general welfare of women. You know, so Pertiwi, even in those days then, moved into healthcare. You know, we had our mobile clinics. Mm-hmm. We were going to kampongs, to rubber estates, to bring a mobile group of doctors and nurses who were our members, you know, and we used to also get donations for the medications from the drug companies, and we move on. Even now, if you go to our soup kitchen, we don't just feed them; we have also our mobile clinic there. You know, we have especially surgeons volunteering.
So healthcare is a huge issue. Is it access to healthcare or the cost of healthcare?
It's both. You know, with the homeless, for example, okay, government has set up Clinic Malaysia. But to get there, because Clinic Malaysia is not everywhere, you know. So to get there means transport costs. So it's access. So even if Clinic Malaysia provides cheap medical care, but there is the issue of access for these people.
Right. I'm really fascinated about Pertiwi's work with the soup kitchen because, you know, most NGOs say that it's the urban poor that make up the majority of people who come to soup kitchens. Has that been the case for Pertiwi as well?
Yes.
Looking at helping urban poor.
Urban poor, as well as you need to realize there are the younger population who have migrated to KL to look for employment. They're not unemployed. They are employed. But if you are earning RM1,000, for example, and if you have to send most of that money back to kampung, otherwise your people in the kampung is starving. These people cannot afford a room to live in. A room in KL is perhaps RM500. And then the transport costs, they can't survive.
So they have jobs, they are employed.
There are some of them. Okay. I'm not saying all.
Right.
Some of them, the younger ones especially, they are employed, but they cannot afford to survive in KL.
Okay.
You know, if they also need to send money back to the kampung, which most of them do. You know, so there's of course the homeless, the urban homeless, because they are homeless. There's a lot of single mothers. If you come in and see our soup kitchen, there's a lot of single mothers, a lot of children. Pertiwi has been very lucky because if you go there, you will see our volunteers are of all races. even though we're supposed to be a Muslim group, mm-hmm. but we have volunteers of all races and of both gender. You get a lot of men. The doctors mostly are men. There's a few of the female doctors as well. And we have nurses, some nurses who come and help out.
And they're not members, they're just volunteers.
A lot of them, we are now, they're volunteers, but we are planning to change our constitution because our constitution as of now is very strict. It's got to be women and Muslim women. So we are going to change and we are going to create a new category in Pertiwi called Sahabat Pertiwi.
Friends of Pertiwi.
Friends mm-hmm. of Pertiwi. And they will, the only thing they do not have, the right they do not have, is voting at the AGM. They can come as observers and all that, but they have no vote, that's all. But it will be open to non-Muslims, it will be open to men. It's really recognizing the support that we have got from all races.
I'm speaking to Tan Sri Rafia Salim, president of the NGO Pertiwi. After this, more about their work in trying to champion the welfare and needs of women and children as we celebrate International Women's Day today. Stay tuned to The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9. Good morning. Today on The Breakfast Grill, I have Tan Sri Rafia Salim, President of Pertubuhan Tindakan Wanita Islam Malaysia, or Pertiwi. Now, just before the break, we were talking about how you have volunteers coming in to help Pertiwi with its work in the Pertiwi Soup Kitchen, with Pertiwi Health Services. I'd like to talk a little bit about, you know, in your name itself, you know, you're a group run by Muslim women, essentially. The name itself is Pertubuhan Tindakan Wanita Islam. But how secular are you in your charity work? Is there a religious connotation to the work that you do?
As I always say, when we do our work, we don't question your race, your religion, your gender. You know, those who comes to us for help are all races and both gender. So it's about helping society. And society is not just made of women, you know. So the fact that we are a women's organization really was born out of the needs of women in the earlier days right. of our country, you know. But now, as I said earlier, we have expanded our clients, our clients' base.
Well, what about funding, Tan Sri? How does Pertiwi sustain itself?
Alhamdulillah, we have had some very good support. There are individuals who support us. But what is more important to run something like a soup kitchen is the corporate support.
And how do you get more private sector participation? If I'm not mistaken, Hong Leong Islamic.
Help us too. Hong Leong Islamic help us, particularly with our program Kasih
Pertiwi for HIV positive children.
Yes, yes. That is dedicated to that. And then we have other organizations that gives us fund for our soup kitchen.
So this is private organization. So you, I mean, when you talk about how Pertiwi is funded, is it mainly by private individuals or are you looking to tie up with corporations?
No, it's mainly corporations. Mm-hmm. Yes. In terms of the amount, it's mainly the corporations. And the good thing is with the corporations, they actually will come and volunteer. They don't just give the money, they come and volunteer. Sometimes even the CEOs turn out to help to give the food. In fact, I sit on, among other company boards, Allianz. And Allianz has a very strong CSR.
CSR.
Yeah. And they've done a lot in terms of helping, including Pertiwi. We have other organizations, HSBC has been supporting us as well.
I have a question. Do you think that Malaysians' mindsets are geared towards charitable acts?
I think if we were to compare with America, we are still far behind. But in terms of the majority of the country and society, we are also far behind. But we hopefully we will get there. But the corporations have been pretty generous. But the important thing is all these individuals or organizations, they need to actually see that what they're giving is being utilized properly. And for us, we are very, very strict with accounting what is given by people to us.
Making sure that every cent is accountable.
Yes.
Okay. Well, you're not just a former VC of UM, but also you are part of the G25. You're part of the group that advocates moderation.
Yeah, but I've been very inactive.
But, you know, that just speaks to, I think, the mindset of the group. You know, former civil servants who believe in moderation, perhaps concerned at the direction of the country. What are your thoughts regarding the Private Members Bill to amend the Sharia Courts Act? You know, that's simply because as a Muslim woman in charge of a Muslim women's association, trying to help other women championing rights and their needs, what do you think this spells for the future of the Muslim woman?
You see, with that motion, it's not yet a bill, you know, motion table in Parliament. My disappointment with that is, why are we focusing so much on the punishment? We're talking about, it's about enhancing the Sharia court. The word enhancing does not mean just giving it more power to punish. There are so many shortcomings of the implementation of Islamic law in Malaysia. I mean, we've got children being abandoned by fathers. I call them bapa penyu. They go off and never get seen again. And there are women who are left with, what is this, gantung tak bertali, you know, and do not get any support. They're not divorced. They're left hanging. I mean, why aren't we addressing all these first? If we want to enhance the court, then enhance them in their implementation of those laws that are not being implemented properly. And if you see, if you look at all the shortcomings of the Sharia court, it's about the welfare of women and children. It's so fundamental. If you talk about sins, how much bigger a sin it is to abandon your children and your family for a man. And yet, we're not asking them to be enhanced to do that. We're just looking at punishment. That bill is purely about punishment.
And my concern would be, how would the rights of women and the needs of women be ensured, will be taken care of should this bill be passed, right? Well, what is the future of Muslim women?
It's not taken off because they don't address that. They just address that bill is about giving more power to punish. It's nothing to do with improving what they are doing. I mean, I'm very disappointed with that. I mean, who needs all this terrible punishment that they're talking about?
Do you think championing women's rights, feminism and Islam can coexist?
Of course. You know, if you look at our prophet, he treats women, you know what he says, that if your mother calls you, your mother is three times more important.
Right. So if your mother and your father call you at the same time,
it's your mother
your
first.
Your mother is first, three times more than your
times,
father.
Three times, yes. Because we don't expect, or I don't expect, our men to be like Muhammad. You know, but look at what he was. You know, you talk about right to polygamy. Yeah, by all means, you can have that right. But Islam says that if you cannot be fair, then you shouldn't marry more than one.
The operative word being fair.
Being fair, yes. And who can be fair but Muhammad? Who else?
Right. Well, there are many, I think, different layers of society, and talking about women's rights for different layers of society. We've spoken about the urban poor and single mothers. We've spoken about students, women, female students in universities. But what about working women? Women who are struggling to break the corporate ceiling, women who are leaking out of the work pipeline. Now, you yourself have broken many barriers for all womankind. You were the first Malaysian to be appointed to such a high post in the United Nations. You were Assistant Secretary General for HR Management in the UN back in the 1990s. And also, as I mentioned, the first woman VC for Vice Chancellor for University of Malaya. So for all universities in Malaysia. So what do you think about the issues surrounding working women at the moment, given the lack of support that working women get or have in corporate life?
Yeah, first there is a general issue about the support that a woman needs. A study has been done out of Singapore, I can't remember what it is, where they say that now the cost of the leaking pipeline is no longer the childcare, because there's a whole lot of good childcare facilities around.
What is it if it's not childcare?
It's the care of old people, the care of parents. That is causing the care of parents, or parents-in-law, because it always falls on the girls. So that is apparently now the bigger cause, bigger reason for women to drop out of service, which is such a shame, because as a nation, we invest so much money in educating our girls. You know, it's free education, very cheap education in public universities, and most of them are women. But we, as a nation, we're not giving enough support, you know. So we should be looking at setting up, besides childcare, is some form of halfway house for the old folks, you know, that girls can, or even guys, can drop off their elderly parents at a center.
Like an aged care center.
Yes, an aged care center. You know, I mean, these parents are not totally helpless, but, you know, it's good for them to have a place where there's a group, there's somebody looking after, there is a doctor available at any time. And then when they come back from work, they pick their parents up. So that sort of support would be great. Not the way the home, the old folks' home is generally, you know. But you want this to be a very interactive, interesting place.
So culturally, we are of a society that expects children to take care of their parents in the when they are elderly. So I don't know whether culturally that is acceptable. I remember reading a news report to say that perhaps the ministry is looking to reduce its support on old folks' homes, because they say, why can't the children take care of their parents? It's your filial duty to take care of your parents in their old age.
I'm not saying you abandon your folks. You know, I'm talking about, I mean, if you have a center like this, then it facilitates the children to be able to do both, taking care of their parents when they're off work, but at the same time, they can contribute to nation building by utilizing their talents at work.
So it's considered like a support system.
Yes, it's a support system, so that that culture can be maintained.
I've been speaking to Tan Sri Rafia Salim, President of Pertubuhan Tindakan Wanita Islam Malaysia, or better known as Pertiwi. Happy International Women's Day to you, Tan Sri, and also everyone working to champion and empower women worldwide. Thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, and happy Women's Day to all.
I'm Melissa Idris for The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.